रभते
कर्मा
मूत्र तत्पुमान भुंक्ते ह्यव्यवधानेन लिंगेन मनसा स्वयं The great sage Narada continued, The living entity acts in a gross body in this life. This body is forced to act by the subtle body, composed of mind, intelligence, and ego. After the gross body is lost, the subtle body is still there to enjoy or suffer. Thus there is no change. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The living entity has two kinds of body, the subtle body and the gross body. Actually, he enjoys through the subtle body, which is composed of mind, intelligence, and ego. The gross body is the instrumental outer covering. When the gross body is lost, or when it dies, the root of the gross body, the mind, intelligence, and ego, continue and bring about another gross body. Although the gross bodies apparently change, the real root of the gross body, the subtle body of mind, intelligence, and ego, is always there. The subtle body's activities, be they pious or impious, create another situation for the living entity to enjoy or suffer in the next gross body. Thus the subtle body continues, whereas the gross bodies change one after another. Since modern scientists and philosophers are too materialistic, and since their knowledge is taken away by the illusory energy, they cannot explain how the gross body is changing. The materialistic philosopher Darwin has tried to study the changes of the gross body, but because he had no knowledge of either the subtle body or the soul, he could not clearly explain how the evolutionary process is going on. One may change the gross body, but he works in the subtle body. People cannot understand the activities of the subtle body, and consequently they are bewildered as to how the actions of one's gross body affect another gross body. The activities of the subtle body are also guided by the supersoul, as explained in Bhagavad Gita. Sarvasya chaham ridishan nivishto mattasmatir jnanam apohanam cha vedaishta sarver aham eva vedyo vedanta kribeda videva chaham. I am seated in everyone's heart, and from me come remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. By all the Vedas I am to be known. Indeed, I am the compiler of Vedanta, and I am the knower of the Vedas. Narada Muni is here in continuing his instructions to King Prachini Bhargi. this great king, Prachini Barhishat, was very learned, but was somehow or other misguided by improper teachers. Even his so-called spiritual masters taught him that the goal of life is sense gratification. And by performing various sacrifices in a pious way, one would get elevation to higher forms of material prosperity. Therefore, King Prachini Barhishat lived his life in this way. Although he was actually a very religious person, he did not have the proper conclusions of the purpose of religion. Indeed, he even sent his sons, the Prachetas, to go into the forest to perform tapasya in order to purify their hearts so that they could take over ruling the kingdom. But the purpose of that purification was not properly understood by the king. This is a very common problem within the world today. If you go to any country, the majority are following a particular religion, whether it be the Christian religion, or the Islam religion, or the Buddhist religion, or what we call the Hindu religion, or the Judaic religion, or the Jain religion, Parsi religion. But we find that most places, if not all places, are grossly materialistic. And even the most religious people within society are somewhat pious. And they are worshiping God with the idea that they will get a better life within this world. They do not understand what is the eternal nature of the soul, and what is the ultimate goal of the desires of the soul. So King Prachini Barhishat was such a person, very religious, but not very transcendental. There are four goals, purusharthas, that are advocated within the Vedic literatures and other scriptures as well, and that is to worship God or the demigods for sense gratification, for economic development, for religiosity, or for liberation. And we find practically everyone propounding the identity of being a religious person is worshiping God for one of these four reasons. People who think they are this body consider that the goal of life is to enjoy through the senses. And therefore, people want more sense gratification. And economic development is the means to provide and secure our sense gratification. And a little higher than these two grosser platforms of religious life is religiosity. That means where we want to be philanthropic. We want to be pious. We want to do good to others. But how are we trying to do good to others? On the basis of sense gratification and economic development. By giving them a better, healthier body, by giving them a more secure means of livelihood by which they can enjoy the relative illusions of this material world. So people perform many sacrifices and give in great charity This is called religiosity. But after doing all this, birth after birth, one is still frustrated. So therefore, one approaches God for liberation. Enough with this material world. Let me just somehow or other get out. Let me just negate it all. But Narada Muni is a true Vaishnavacharya. Therefore, he is speaking something to Maharaj Pachini Barhishat that he has not heard properly before in all of his years as a religious man. Narada Muni is telling him the conclusions of all knowledge, which is the Purushartha Shiromani, the crest jewel of all goals of life, and that is pure unalloyed devotion to Lord Krishna, which is the eternal constitutional nature of the soul. But in order to understand how to love Krishna, first we must understand very clearly what is the nature of the soul, what is the nature of this gross body, and what is the nature of the subtle body, comprising the mind, intelligence, and the false ego. These things are very important. And what are the interrelationships between them all? This, Srila Narada Muni is very, very scientifically describing to Maharaj Prachini Barhishat. But unfortunately, when Narada Muni saw this great king, he understood that he's very, very powerful, he's very learned, he's very popular and influential, very rich, and he also considers himself to be very religious. So how to preach to someone like this? If you tell someone that they are wrong, unless they are very special, humble souls, they will become very defensive because the ego never wants to admit that they're wrong. The ego will try to prove the whole world making a mistake before they are willing to admit that they have made a mistake. And even if they have made a mistake, rather than taking the blame for that mistake, they want to somehow or other blame everyone and anyone that can possibly be involved for the cause of me making that mistake. So ultimately, I'm a great soul. This is the condition of every false ego. And we find sometimes a person who has a little bit of humility will admit, yes, I have made a mistake, but understand the circumstances why I made the mistake. It's not my fault, it's everyone else's fault. But that's almost the same as saying I didn't make the mistake. Everybody else made it. I'm just the representative of everyone else. What can I do? So Narada Muni was a very expert preacher. A preacher is not someone who defeats others in argument and philosophy. A preacher is one who changes others' hearts and transforms them into devotees of the Lord, somehow or other. So Narada Muni didn't want to just leave the palace of Prachini Barhishat and boast to the world, I defeated the king. He wanted to make the king an ecstatic, blissful devotee of Krishna. Somehow or other, by any means. Srila Prabodhananda Saraswati Thakur explains the method in which a real preacher should present this Krishna consciousness to a man or woman who thinks that they know. Especially big people who are proud because so many people are respecting them. You approach them as if you are one of the many people who respect them. And you put straw between your teeth. In the Vedic culture, this was a very, very important symbol When you put straw between your teeth and you approach someone, that means you are approaching in utter humility. You are taking a completely subordinate position to that person. It means you are great and I am small. That's what it means. And only a very rare soul would put straw between his teeth when coming before someone else. Because everyone knows what it means. You are submitting to me. So Prabodhananda Saraswati says, we should take the straw between our teeth. And we should approach such a person and we should say, you are very great. And you are very learned. And you are very pious. And you are very exalted. And everyone knows these things. Therefore, you are very famous. And the person is listening. And he's thinking, yes, very good. And he becomes very happy with you. And then he says, I'm very pleased. What can I do for you? And then you say, oh, what can you do for me? You should forget everything you have ever learned. And you should understand that you are the eternal servant of Krishna and surrender to Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That's what you should do. By that time, the person is receptive. Because you've already convinced him that you are his friend and well-wisher by all your praise. And then when you come to the main point, he will accept. This is the method of preaching. And Narada Muni, he is following this advice of Srila Prabodhananda Saraswati. He is approaching King Prachini Barhishat. Oh, you are very learned. You are Pandit. And you are Raja. You are a great king. And how much you are helping so many people. Let me tell you a story. The king said, oh yes, I want to hear whatever you say. Already the person is so happy with what you're saying. He opens his heart to hear anything else you say. And then Narada Muni began to inject the medicine. But he disguised the medicine in such a way that the king thought he was talking about someone else. He was telling the story of Puranjan. Puranjan was a great king. And many chapters of Srimad Bhagavatam composed this narration of Sri Narada Muni. And ultimately, due to his misconceptions of religion, sacrificing animals, and he was pious in one sense, but he was materialistic and he was attached to his family and attached to his palace and attached to all of his furnitures and his paraphernalia. And then he died and he took another birth. And by the time Narada Muni came to this part of the story, King Prachini Barhishat realized, he's talking about me. Everything he said is exactly what I am. But he just used different names and different titles and different cities. But he listened so carefully, he accepted the whole message. And by the time he realized that it was him, he was convinced that he must change his life. So he's explaining here to Narada Muni in the previous verses that I learned from so many different gurus and acharyas of the Karmakanda, Jnanakanda, Yogakanda divisions of knowledge. So many things, but I have not heard this. Therefore, I have been misled. You are teaching me the ultimate truth. The conclusion. Vedaista saravairaham eva vedyo vedanta krit veda vedeva chaham. Krishna says that he is the compiler of the Vedas. Vedavyas is the Shakyavesh avatar, who is an expansion of Krishna himself, personally. Therefore, who knows the Vedas better than the author himself? So Krishna says, I wrote the Vedas, and by all the Vedas, I am to be known. I am the only goal of the Vedas. So therefore, all the various divisions of philosophy and religion, of all the great scriptures of the world, not only the Vedas, are ultimately meant us to bring to the point of knowing Krishna. Gradual process. Bahunam janmanam ante jnanapamam papadyate vasudeva sarvamiti samahatma sudurlava. After many births and deaths of following so many various religious processes, when one finally comes to the platform of knowledge, Krishna says that person will surrender to me, knowing that I am the cause of all causes. Nate viduswarat katim hi Vishnu. Little Prahlad Maharaj, he explained like this, that the goal of life is to know Vishnu. The goal of life is not economic development, sense gratification, pious religious activities, or liberation. Because all of these are artificial and superficial to the true nature of the soul. Therefore, the beginning of understanding real religion is to understand what is the nature of the soul. And therefore, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna begins with this principle. Dehino smin yatha dehe komaram yovanam jara tatha dehantara praptiya dhirasthatra namuyate. That the soul is evolving through various stages within this life, namely boyhood, youth, old age. Similarly, at the time of death, the soul evolves into another body. Within this material world, everything is always changing. And the soul is always subjected to the changes brought about by the laws of material nature. But what is the true nature of the soul? Na jayate mriyate va kadachin nayam bhupa bhavita va nabhuya ajo nitya shashvato yam purano na hanyate hanyamane sarire. The soul is unborn. It will never die. It is spiritual. It is not slain when the body is slain. And Krishna, he explains how this soul, it cannot be cut into pieces by any weapon. It cannot be wet by water. It cannot be burned by fire. It is transcendental to this entire material existence. Vasam sijyanani yatha vihaya navani granati naroparani tatha sarirani vihaya janani anyati samyani navani dehi. That just as a person changes clothes, takes off the old clothes to put on new clothes, in the same way a person dies and takes a new body, giving up the old discarded body and taking up new, again and again and again. But Krishna says, mamaivam so jivaloke jivabhuta shanat. That soul is part and parcel of me. It is Satchit Ananda, eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss. As my part and parcel, that soul is my eternal servant. And Sanatan Dharma, which is the essential perfection of every religion, is to understand that our eternal occupation is to serve Krishna. The Dharma means one that cannot be separated from one's own existence. The Dharma of sugar is that it is sweet. Sugar is always sweet. The dharma of fire is that it produces heat. The dharma of water is liquidity. In a very, very artificial environment, the water may be solid as ice. But as soon as that water is put in its natural inhabitant, immediately it becomes liquid again, because its nature is liquid. So similarly, the constitutional nature of the soul is to serve God with pure, unalloyed love and devotion. But somehow or other, due to artificial environment in which the soul is residing, we have forgotten that. And we are thinking that the goal of life is to serve our own egos and to serve our own senses. Therefore, real Sanatan Dharma is simply to understand who we are and what is our relationship with God. And therefore, Krishna stresses throughout the Gita, what is the subtle body, what is the gross body, and what is the soul? And as it is described here by Sri Narada Muni, the gross body is a temporary residence, but the subtle body is actually what is enjoying through the gross body. Because if your mind is frustrated, then however much your senses are enjoying, will you be happy? If some terrible calamity takes place and you're in utter misery mentally, your body might be in perfect health, but if someone you love leaves this world in the form of death, or if your whole business collapses, or if you find out something terrible is coming, a great bomb is coming to destroy your country, then even if you have nice food, will you be able to enjoy? Even if there's some nice music playing, will you enjoy it? Because your mind will be so frustrated, it cannot enjoy. So actually, what is sense gratification? The mind is trying to enjoy through the senses. But if the mind is not enjoying, however much the senses are enjoying, there is no enjoyment. Because the mind is actually between the soul and the senses. But the fact is that the soul is the real enjoyer, but it is enjoying through the mind with the senses. If your mind is peaceful, even if your senses are withering away in with nothing to enjoy, your mind will be happy. And if your mind is not peaceful, even if your senses have access to all the pleasures of the world, you will be miserable. So to control the mind is the real formula by which we can be happy. But what is the happiness the soul is looking for? That we must train the mind to accept. It is explained that this subtle body is covering the soul and carrying the soul according to its own desires, from one gross body to another, and to another. Through the experiences and the impressions that come into your life, you develop a certain conception of your identity through your mind. And you engage in so many activities according to that identity. And you produce so much karma, pious or impious activities. And all this is stored within your mind. And according to your destiny that you have created yourself through your previous acts, at a certain point, this gross body will die. But the mind, the intelligence, and the false ego still remain perfectly healthy and intact on the physical level, subtle physical level. So then, just as is it explained, fragrance is carried by the wind from one place to another, similarly, by the laws of nature, the subtle body of the mind, intelligence, and ego carry the soul to the next destined gross body it is meant to try to enjoy or suffer through. And Srila Prabhupada explains, because people do not understand these teachings of the Bhagavad Gita in regard to the gross body, the subtle body, and the soul, even the greatest so-called philosophers and scientists are speculating like anything, but cannot come to a proper understanding. Srila Prabhupada says, the materialistic philosopher Darwin has tried to study the changes of the gross body, but because he had no knowledge of either the subtle body or the soul, he could not clearly explain how the evolutionary process is going on. In Darwin's theory of evolution, there are so many unsolved mysteries. There are so many questions he simply cannot answer. It is all a speculative process. And there is no doubt Charles Darwin was a very, very brilliant man materially. He had a very active and analytical mind. And he had great amounts of experience within this world. But still, you cannot understand the higher conceptions of transcendental knowledge through any material expertise. It is beyond our intelligence. It is beyond our brain to fathom. Pratyaksha anumam and shruti. We cannot understand simply by our sense perception or by analytic consistent conclusions or logic. We can only understand the truth beyond our mind and senses, gross and subtle, by hearing from authority. And who is that authority? Dharmantu sakshat bhagavat pranitam. There is only one authority, and that is Krishna. Evam parampara praptam idam brajashayavati. And one who simply repeats the message of Krishna, that person is authority, on behalf of the real authority. Therefore, this is the only proper process by which we can understand things as they are. Srila Prabhupada explains that unless we hear from a proper acharya, we cannot understand what is what. Truth, reality cannot be understood. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada and all of our great acharyas, they never claimed to be great thinkers. They never claimed to be munis. Muni in the sense of the material idea is one has to come up with a philosophy that's different than everybody else who has ever presented, and it must defeat all of them to show that you're very, very clever and you have a very brilliant intelligence. The great acharyas, they don't try to show their brilliant intelligence. They just, with all humility, in the mood of a servant, just present the message of Krishna. Krishna has the ultimate intelligence. Why not just repeat what he has said? So Bhagavad Gita as it is, as Krishna has explained it, can transform the hearts of people and give them real realization. But Darwin and these other materialistic philosophers, they explain things very, very systematically. And because they explain things in a more precise analytical procedure, than anyone else was able to do on the mental and intellectual platform, they are considered authorities. And for generations, the whole scientific world practically were accepting that his theory of evolution is fact. This is the reality. This is the discovery that is answering the real questions of life. Because everyone around sees so many species of life, and everyone sees so many changes in this life and in other lives. So the natural question of any sincere person will be, what's happening? What's happening? I'm in this world, and there are little creatures who are insects, and there are other little creatures that are lizards, and there are...
Chipkali.
Ah, yes, Chipkali. This is my first Hindi lesson. But at the time of death, don't say Chipkali. Just chant Hare Krishna. And there are worms and bacteria, and there are birds flying in the sky, and there are animals walking on the land, and there are fish swimming in the sea, and there are humans trying to be like all the rest of them. So the natural question that one will have living in this world is, what's happening all around me? Why are there so many different kinds of species of life? And why I'm changing from little babyhood to old age? What's happening? So many philosophers and so many scientists are trying to explain what's happening. But Charles Darwin was more intelligent than the rest of them. So therefore, his theory was considered, oh, this is very good. He's explaining how the various species of life are evolving from very, very simple species to very complex species. And there are different links in the form of characteristics within one species that carry on to another species, but then they are developed more due to the environmental conditions. This is very, very clever. But unfortunately, it is all wrong. From the conclusive point of view. From the relative point of view, there were many good ideas that he explained. In fact, Srila Prabhupada and the great Acharyas, on the version of the Vedas, they say, yes, he's right, there is an evolutionary process. But he doesn't know who or what is evolving. That is the problem. And that seems to be an important matter that was completely omitted and forgotten. Who is it that's evolving through the various species of life? And what is it that's causing this evolution? This cannot be described unless you understand the nature of the soul and the nature of the subtle physical body, which is the mind, the intelligence, and the false ego. Yes, the evolution is taking place. But if you want to understand the goal of life, you have to understand something Charles Darwin did not explain, that it is you that is evolving. He's impersonally saying evolution is happening. But where do you fit in? What does it have to do with you? It really has nothing to do with you except to satisfy your intellectual inquiries as far as what's happening. But actually, it is you, the soul, that is evolving through all these various 8,400,000 species of life. And how are you evolving? In the human life, we are given independence. With independence comes responsibility. Every word that you speak, every act that you perform will 100% get a reaction. You cannot escape it by any material means. Understand how responsible this human life is. Whatever you say, there will be a reaction. Whether you tell someone a secret or whether you say it on All India Radio, whatever you speak, you will get a reaction. Every syllable of every word will create a reaction. So we should not just speak loosely. We should know how responsible. The laws of nature are tuning in and listening to whatever you say. And every action that you perform, there will be a reaction. Even if no one else sees it, if it's in the darkness of a closet, the demigods are seeing. The super soul in your heart is seeing. And the laws of nature will respond. And what happens whenever we act or speak? In previous ages, everything you think, there will be a reaction. In Kali Yuga, people are so weak that if we were responsible for everything we think, everyone would be living in hell in Kali Yuga. So therefore, there's a concession due to the fallen condition. You are absolutely responsible in the material sense for everything you speak and do, but you are not responsible for your thoughts. In previous ages, if you thought bad about someone, reaction would come. If you thought lust or envy or pride, you would be crushed just because you thought that. In Kali Yuga, if you think it and you dwell on it, you will inevitably speak and act upon it, and then there will be reaction. But an intelligent person, when a negative or materialistic thought comes to mind, immediately tries to replace it with good thoughts. That is very important. That is your responsibility. And everything that is being done karmically, it is all being imbibed and absorbed within your subtle body of the mind, intelligence, and false ego. And it's creating so many various reactions in this life. And at the time of death, the culmination of all the desires that have been awakened through your karmic activities, the laws of nature, like the wind, will carry the subtle body to another gross body. So human life is responsible. And unless we understand this, we will think that we can get away with so many things against the laws of God. Actually, the government should be based on pure spiritual principles, not necessarily sectarian religious principles, but philosophical religious principles. Otherwise, if the government's passing laws and saying it's all right to eat meat, it's all right to have abortions, it's all right to engage in dating and all of these other things between boys and girls, then what is the result? Everyone is thinking it's all right. But the laws of nature will punish you, will crush you for everything you're doing. So the beginning of real protection is to give people proper knowledge. However good our sentiments are, they are useless unless they are based in the principle of knowledge. A mother may love the child, but if the mother gives a child food that is poison and she thinks that it will nourish him, then the child dies and suffers. So what is the use of such love? Real love and protection has to be based on knowledge. And real knowledge has to be understanding that we are the eternal soul, part of Krishna.
And we have this subtle body that is taking us birth after birth after birth to so many gross bodies in which we enjoy or suffer. And when a human being grossly misuses his existence, then he is cast down to the lower species. And then that soul has to evolve through the 8,000,000 species of life until it finally comes back to the human existence. And now, atato brahma jigyasa. Now you have attained this human life. It is meant for self-realization. It is not meant to behave again, eating, sleeping, mating, defending like the animals, and have to be cast down again into an animal species of life. Through this evolution, and Krishna explains that bhakti, devotional service, is the means by which we can free our soul from both the subtle and gross bodies forever. Through devotional service, we awaken the original ecstatic nature of our soul's existence by engaging in the service of Krishna, by always remembering Krishna. This is ultimately the perfection of all religion. Manmana bhava madbhakto madhyajim nam namaskuru. Mam evaisha shishatyam te prati jani priyoshime. Krishna says, always think of me. Become my devotee. Worship me and offer your homage to me. Always taking the instructions of Krishna, trying to understand them, and trying to think of ways of serving Krishna, then the intelligence becomes purified. And if the false ego is always identifying itself as Krishna's devotee, hearing about Krishna, chanting Krishna's names, and trying to serve Krishna, then the ego becomes purified. And when they guide the senses into the service of Krishna, sarvopadiva nirmuktam tatparatena nirmalam rishikena rishikesa sevanam bhakti ruchyate, then the senses become purified. We do not want to annihilate the mind or senses, as the nihilistic school of philosophers teach. We want to purify our mind and our senses by engaging them in Krishna's service. Because actually, the spirit soul has a body, a mind, an intelligence, and an ego. They all exist on the spiritual platform, but they are all engaged in remembering Krishna and serving Krishna always. So when we teach our gross and subtle body how to engage in Krishna's service by always remembering Krishna and serving Krishna, we become purified. And we become eternally free or liberated from the misconceptions of the materialistic gross and subtle bodies. And at the time of death, Krishna says, yam yam vapi smaran bhavam tejachyante kalevaram antakali chamameva smaran bhaktva kalevaram. We will think of Krishna and we will go back home, back to Godhead, to Krishna. Janma karma chame divyam evam yo veti tatvata tyakva deham punarajan naiti mameti swarajana. One who remembers me and understands the nature of my appearance and activities does not take birth again in this material world in the evolutionary cycle of birth and death. But such a person returns to my abode and lives with me eternally in transcendental love. So that is the goal of life. And that is what Sri Narada Muni has so expertly presented to Maharaj Prachinibarhishat. And Maharaj Prachinibarhishat is so much enlightened, enlivened, and inspired to hear these teachings of Narada Muni. I have never heard these before. I have heard from so many rishis and so many gurus and so many so-called acharyas and so many yogis and so many sadhus and so many pandits and so many teachers, but I have not heard this message. Sarva dharman puritya cha mam ekam sharanam braja aham tvam sarva papevyo moksha ishami masucha. Every pandit in India will quote this verse, surrender to Krishna. But who is teaching us that surrender to Krishna means to surrender to the personality of Godhead Krishna through love and devotion? Therefore, we must understand, as King Prachini Barhishad, we may have our family gurus, and we may have our past experiences of so many teachings. People may have given us so many mantras. But if they are all to improve our material life, they may be important to the degree they make you pious. But when you come to the higher, to the threshold of higher knowledge, where you are being taught to transcend material existence and enter into the realm of spiritual existence through pure devotional service, then all of these other teachings become irrelevant and unnecessary. In fact, they all become a distraction. That is why Krishna says, sarva dharman puritya ja mam ekam sharanam braja aham tvam sarva papebhyo moksha ishami masucha. Abandon all varieties of religion. That means abandon all theories, all philosophies, abandon all gurus, so-called acharyas, pandits, teachers, sadhus, yogis, abandon all them and just surrender to Krishna. All other mantras, all other rituals, all other sacrifices, all other prayers to the demigods. Krishna says, abandon all varieties of religion. No doubt, these things may be religion, but if it is karmakanda religion, or jnanakanda religion, or yogakanda religion, it is to be abandoned. Anya bilashita sunyam jnana karmanyanabhitam anukulyena krishnanam shiladam bhaktarutama. We accept only pure devotional service, and the path that leads to pure devotional service. And we should not think we are making offense to someone by doing like this. We can offer our respects for anyone who has helped us on any level in our life. But the goal of human life is to not take birth again in this material world, not to take a better birth, where better sense gratification is provided. The goal of human life is to achieve the eternal destination of Krishna consciousness, Sanatana Dharma. By watering the root of the tree, every part of the tree is satisfied. By surrendering to Krishna, every other type of religious responsibility we've ever been given is completely fulfilled. Devarshi bhutaptinirnam pitranam nakinkuro nayamanani charajan sarvatmana yasharanam sharanyam gato mukundam parijitya karatam. When we surrender to Mukunda, that beautiful cowherd boy of Brajbhumi, Krishna, then all of our responsibilities to all of our previous gurus and teachers, to our mothers and our fathers and our grandfathers and our grandmothers and our great-grandfathers and our great-grandmothers and all of our dynasty of our hereditarial line of descendants. All of our responsibility for all the 33 million demigods we are obliged to. All responsibilities to all the great kings who have provided so many facilities for us, which we are using for our survival and our enjoyment in this world. They are all perfectly fulfilled. Why is that? Because whatever our parents or our ancestors whatever any religious persons who has taught us in the past, whatever the demigods have given us, whatever favors we have even gotten from ghosts and spirits. Actually, you don't know how many times you're getting favors from ghosts and spirits. But they are very, very cruel. Sometimes they work through someone to give you a benefit, but then you are obliged to be controlled by them until they are paid back. Hare Krishna. And actually, large portions of human population today are being controlled by ghosts and spirits. They don't even know it. People act crazy. Their minds just go like this. They do things. They don't even know why. So we have so many obligations. But whoever has gotten anything, they are all getting it from Krishna. Sarva karana karanam. He is the cause of all causes. He is the source of everything that exists. Janma yashayataha. Everything emanates from Krishna. So therefore, if you water the root of the tree, every part of the tree is nourished. If you please Krishna, all your responsibilities are fulfilled. That is why Krishna says, Sarva dharman parityaja mamekam sharanam braja. I shall relieve you of all sinful reactions. I shall put you on the transcendental platform where there is no fear. Just abandon all varieties of religion and surrender to me. So Narada Muni, his only purpose wherever he goes is to convince people to surrender to Krishna. We never find Narada Muni giving a second message. He will never tell you that you'll find happiness in this material world. Surrender to Krishna. That is real mercy. And King Prachini Barhishat, by this most expert, sensitive, and compassionate preaching of Narada Muni, he becomes a pure devotee of Krishna and perfects his life. As did many other disciples of Narada Muni, such as Prahlad Maharaj, or Dhruva Maharaj, or the sons of Daksha. Huh? No. Hariyashvas. The sons of Daksha, Daksha was also like Maharaj Prachini Barhishat. He was a very religious man and a very learned pundit and had so many gurus and teachers always teaching him about karmakandic yajnas. And all these karmakandic, whenever a karmakandic yajna was performed for every stage of life, of children, of adults, everyone, just to make life auspicious. Before our child begins school, we'll do a yajna for he gets good grades. And before he goes into business, we'll do a yajna for he'll make a lot of money. So many yajnas. Anyways, Narada Muni preached to his sons and told them, surrender to Krishna. Sarva dharman parityaja mam ekam sharanam. Are you the body or are you the soul? If you are the soul, the nature of the soul is to love Krishna. So surrender. So they believed Narada Muni and they became pure devotees. Daksha was very angry. Why is he interfering with my domestic life? Why are these sadhus are trying to disturb my happy family? Now they've all become brahmacharis. They've all joined his ashram. This is very bad. So he made so many other sons, and then he sent his other sons to perform yajna, and he told them, don't do what your brothers have done. This is very bad. they have become Hare Krishna devotees. This is very So Narada Muni came to them and he told them, your other brothers are they're so happy, chanting, dancing. Why don't you become like them? And so they decided, yes, we will become like them. Narada Muni is speaking very, very high truths. Something we have not heard from our father. Something we have not heard from our family pundits or from our teachers in the schools. He is teaching transcendental spiritual knowledge. So they became Hare Krishna devotees also. And they joined the ashram of Narada Muni. His ashram was not a house. His ashram was, he would just travel with his Veena everywhere. They would just renounce the world and become great souls. So then Daksha became very, very angry. How is this possible? I am such a great person and he is interfering. So he cursed Narada Muni. He cursed Narada Muni that you are not understanding the Vedas. You are not understanding the path of religion. If a person does not enjoy in a pious way to his full extent when he is young, how will he have the proper realizations to renounce everything of this world when he gets old? To convince young boys to renounce this world is very unhealthy. It's premature. First they should be grihasthas, but they should be pious, religious grihasthas, and they should enjoy like anything. And gradually by enjoying and enjoying and enjoying for so many years, puna punashchar vatachar vananam, chewing that which is already chewed through birth after birth after birth. Charles Darwin did not include this. Then in all these different species of life, you're chewing the same thing that he's chewing now. Trying to enjoy this material body, gross and subtle. So Daksha was saying, let them enjoy. Let them, through the process of material nature, go through the ashrams and become burnt out with all this material enjoyment. And then, with realization, they will take to the renounced order of life. But you have convinced them to do it as young boys. Therefore, you are misleading people. You are not a true devotee of Krishna. You are a hypocrite. You are a cheater. You are ruining people's lives. Therefore, I curse you that you will never be able to stay in one place ever again. And Narada Muni was very happy. What to do? Even Narada Muni was not able to convince Daksha. Because people who are too much proud of their material position simply cannot hear. But Lord Shiva, he knew how to preach to Daksha. But we can discuss that in another class. Anyways, this is the illusion. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his devotees are actually in the disciplic succession of Narada Muni. Lord Brahma first spoke knowledge that he heard from Lord Vishnu to Narada. Narada spoke to Vedavyas, to Madhvacharya, through our line. So therefore, within this great sampradaya, we are all the descendants of Narada Muni. And it is our duty simply to repeat the words of Narada Muni for the ultimate benefit of everyone. And what is that message? Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he took this immortal Sanatan Dharma and put it within the context of the Yuga Dharma so that everyone and anyone could realize the highest truth. practically within our very life. Just try to use your mind and senses in the service of Krishna under the directions of Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. Be the humble servant of the servant and always chant the holy names.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare.
When Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was performing wonderful kirtan at Srivas Angan in Navadvip Dham, only very, very special realized devotees were given entrance into that kirtan. So one very highly born Brahmin, he was learned in the scriptures, was very self-controlled, very pious. He was disturbed that he was not allowed to come into the kirtan. Even though he may have been very pious and very charitable and very learned in various divisions of the scriptures and very self-controlled and austere, he had no devotion. Nothing was done in a spirit of love to God. It was all done for fruitive gains. He was considering, by the performance of all my austerities, all my pious charitable acts, by learning the scriptures, I will enjoy this world very nicely. So he became very, very upset. He was a very egoistic person. So the next day, Lord Chaitanya met him. And this Brahmin, he just became red with anger. He said, "You have insulted me. And by insulting me, you have insulted the Brahminical class. Therefore, I curse you that you will lose all your facilities to enjoy material pleasure in this world." And then he broke his sacred thread. And Lord Chaitanya became very ecstatic to hear this. He considered it a great blessing. Within his heart, he was thinking, "Now I have a good excuse to take sannyas, to honor this Brahmin's curse." And he was very happy to do so. So we should understand what is the real goal of life. To love Krishna and to give Krishna to others. Does not mean we have to all become sannyasis or brahmacharis. That is not important. Whichever way a person is naturally most happy and comfortable to serve, that's the way a person should serve. The majority of society will always be grihasthas. But grihasthas, I'm sorry, should be grihasthas. Today, most people are not grihasthas. Grihastha means Krishna in the center. Our home, our children, our bodies, our wealth, everything belongs to Krishna. Let me use everything for Krishna's service. And let my attachment to my family members be attachment that is good for them. You are naturally attached to your wife, your children, your husband, your mother, your father. That attachment is natural. But purify that attachment by showing a great concern for their soul's welfare. Not just to try to give some temporary comforts to their bodies and minds, but do something for their soul. Be attached to the welfare of their soul. That is grihastha ashram. And that is real love. Thank you very much. Is there any questions?